Hi, my name is Leah Delaria, and I am gagging to be Conan O'Brien's friend.
So many ways to take that.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, a friendly little podcast, in my opinion. With
you just got done insulting me, and you're calling this a friendly little podcast.
Wait, that was off mic.
I don't care.
What are you talking about? You're bringing up stuff that happened off mic? How petulant of you. Things that happen off mic didn't happen. Do you understand? No, all I did was make a joke that your newborn daughter wants nothing to do with you and wrote me a crudely written hand, note that she, wanted you out of her life.
And she wrote it in what? What was it?
I said she wrote it in her own spit up.
Yeah.
And then that's all I did was basically say the center of your life now, your newborn, daughter, your first child, despises you. All I did was say that.
Yeah.
Then I started the podcast and you drag that just quick little, I call it a quip, onto the air.
Yeah, I want it on record for the tribunal you'll have to face one day. Mm-hmm.
There'll be no tribunal. There will be no tribunal.
Just mob?
Yeah. It's pretty clear there are no consequences in this country anymore for anything. So it's... So trust me, I think I am free. I think I will never be prosecuted for these crimes.
Anyway, I interrupted. Go ahead. What were you saying?
I was just saying we have a friendly little podcast here. And then you suddenly exploded in rage. That's Matt Gourley, our producer. Of course, Sona Movsesyan joining me here.
Hi.
And Sona sent me some lovely pictures of your twins. And they are dressed up for Christmas, because I guess you're sending out a Christmas card.
I am.
Yeah, they look hilarious.
Yeah, they do. They do look funny.
I love it when my favorite thing is when little kids wear adult outfits.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the case with in your photo. They're dressed up in these cute little Christmas outfits. But my favorite thing is every now and then I'll see like a 2-year-old and they're wearing jeans and a button-up shirt and a leather jacket that has like has like a flight patch on the side, you know, it says like they flew a jet in the Korean War. It cracks me up for some reason. Like who would, you know, this child now is 9 months.
Yeah. I do that all the time.
We got to get some cowhide on that child. It just always seems obscene to me.
No, it's fun. They're your dolls.
Yeah, we just ordered some lingerie for our daughter.
Oh, I do love the holidays. So I just was up in Seattle visiting my wife's family.
Oh,
I like it there because my body.
Wait, what was that segue?
I wanted to mention something, and
from baby lingerie to I was in Seattle.
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk about baby lingerie. Maybe I did the right thing getting us away from.
Yeah,
that.
Probably.
Hey, let's
probably
sexualize babies, or I can tell you about Seattle.
I'm starting to understand my daughter's letter to you. Let's move on.
Yeah. I was in Seattle visiting my wife's family, and they are regular listeners, by the way.
Oh, no. So,
yeah, shout out to... No, they are. Shout out to the Powells in Seattle. They are lovely people. They put on a great Thanksgiving feast for us all, and I had a really good time. And I love being in Seattle, as you know, because my genetic structure insists that I be in a cold, wet climate.
Yeah.
And my body is screaming at me all the time I'm in Los Angeles, get away, get away, get away. And then when I'm up in what basically is Northern Ireland, aka Seattle, I'm very zen. I really love it there. And the people are very nice.
Isn't there, this is going to be a downer, isn't there just a high suicide rate because of the weather in Seattle?
Only when I'm in town. Suicide rates peak when I show up.
People are so upset you're there. They...
Well, no, I didn't say there was any linkage. They just said that there's a huge spike when I show up in town.
Oh, wow.
That's why during Thanksgiving while you were gone, I just wanted to live.
Also, rates plummet in LA when I leave.
Yeah.
But I had an interesting moment where I was in the airport And, you know, you go through, you have your bags and you check them in. My wife and I had, and kids had bags that we had to check in because we brought different stuff. We had brought bigger bags. We couldn't bring them on the airplane. So we're checking the bags in, and the guy said, "Hey, I just want to thank you." He's the guy that was checking our bags. And he said, "I want to thank you. You've been speaking truth to power for a long time, and you brought down a lot of really bad dudes,
huh?
You know, with your truth telling on the air." And I thought, he has the wrong guy.
I know. Who do they think you are?
I don't know. I've never spoken truth to power.
What?
I've been foolish and silly around power, but it was just really, I couldn't say anything. I didn't want to say, "Sir, I think you have the wrong person," because he was so happy to meet me. And he just said, you've taken down a lot of strong, a lot of like bad men.
What?
Yeah. And he went on and on about how I'm like a crime fighter with my career on television. And I didn't say anything and then walked away and felt bad.
Yeah. That's so weird.
He literally didn't speak
truth
to him.
Yeah, he basically just thanked Captain Crunch for all the good he's done.
I don't even know who he would have confused
Maybe
you with.
Maybe he's talking about Stephanie Powers.
I don't know who he thought I was, but somewhere in Seattle, there's a guy who really idolizes me because I brought down the mob.
Oh.
Anyway, very happy.
That's cool.
Yeah. My guest today is a hilarious comedian, musician, and actress who starred in the Netflix series Orange is the New Black. Now you can see her in the film Potato Dreams of America and in the documentary The Lesbian Bar Project. I wish I was in that. Anyway, she also executive produced The Lesbian Bar Project, which is very cool. I'm thrilled she's with us today. Leah Delaria, welcome. I think I'd be a good drag queen.
I think.
What? No?
Let's come up with a drag queen name for Conan right now. Dolores Park.
Ginger Snaps.
Ginger Snaps.
Hey, Sona.
Oh, because of the ginger. Way. That's good.
That was very, yeah.
Bam, no, I don't bam, know. What's, I like that.
Thank you.
I don't know. I'm tall, and I think I'm a very, my mom, I look exactly like my mom, and my mom in her heyday was a very attractive woman, and I think I'm a very attractive woman. No?
You don't think that?
Being someone who's attracted to women, I'm going to take the fifth.
That's very nice.
That's,
you're going to lay back on this.
You just need a few drinks you, and you'll see what I'm talking about. First of all, I'm very delighted that you're here because you really make me laugh. You're very talented, and you and I have always hit it off. You've come on the show.
I'm sorry.
Hear me out. That was not you falling asleep. You brought a very small buzzsaw with you. And you were doing some.
Well, I am a lesbian. I try to carry those power tools with me.
You have so many tools with you right now.
You
go with the cliche, not against the cliche.
Every time.
You had a great joke. What is it? What is it? What is on a second date?
Oh, what does a lesbian bring on a second date? A U-Haul. That's my joke. Yeah, that's my joke.
I love that joke.
So fucking true.
Second date. That quickly,
oh
the U-Haul
God,
comes into it.
Oh, my God. They just mash immediately. Yeah. You know? And I'm always standing there in complete amazement. I don't understand why you guys do this. It's very odd. But lesbians are basically are never less in a relationship very long. They kind of are serial monogamous, and it's because they literally move in together on the second day.
This is good. This is all stuff I can learn about. You know, I met you. You came on the show, on my show, with the cast of Orange is the New Black, mm-hmm. and you told me this great story. You said Jason Biggs asked you if being on the show helped you get women, and your response was fantastic.
Yeah, like I needed a hit show to get pussy straight boy with.
So from there, right from that moment, I thought, oh, you and I are going to get along great. And then you came back on your own, and we had a fantastic time, which ended with us scatting together. And I don't even scat, but that became a very popular clip on our show.
So much
you
fun.
You pushed me to heights or depths that I didn't know I could reach. But I forgot, you know, I had known that you were a talented musician and vocalist, but I didn't know how good you were. And that was a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah. I started my father, Katakai, was
Please say it's really Katakai.
Yeah, my father's name is Katakai. No, his name is not Katakai.
Are you familiar with the Katakai riff?
Why do you think I am saying
because it was possible. I'm so happy.
I was going to faint.
Do you know that that name follows me around? I told a story on this podcast that involves the name Katakai, and the phrase is Katakai as God made her. And I go, and so I was just in San Francisco in an airport.
James Lipton was there.
Yeah,
and he said,
the ghost of James Lipton. And he had 35 index cards of questions. No, I was in an airport and I hear Katakai as God made her. And it's this woman pointing at me, screaming at it across the baggage carousel at San Francisco Airport.
Oh, wow.
And whenever people do it now, I just bow to them. And so anyway, I'm so glad you worked that in.
I had to work it immediately. No, my father's name was Robert.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's Katakai. Yeah.
From now on, my siblings will refer to my father as Katakai because I got that in there. But yeah, he was a jazz musician. And so he literally taught me how to sing, and he would take me with him to gigs.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. You know what I mean? So that way, the guys could go smoke weed while I was on stage. Just, the way jazz musicians do.
Hey, kid. Oh, really? You think I have talent? No, we just want to smoke weed. Just get up there and do 20 minutes. That should fill the bill. And is this in Illinois? Is this where you grew up?
Yeah, East St. Louis, Illinois, and St. Louis, Missouri. That's, where he played.
Right. And so you're doing that. And when did you figure out, wait a minute, I think I'm funny. Was that something you knew right away?
Right away. Everyone in my family is funny. Yeah. Everybody in my family is funny. My mother had a very, very, very dry sense of humor. And my dad was a big goofball. And we're very loud. We're very Italian. No one can get a fucking word in edgewise. Good luck. And I'm the quietest one. Let's put it that way.
That's fantastic.
Of the siblings, I'm the quietest one.
I love that. You're the introvert. You're the quiet, bookish introvert.
That would be me. And I figured out it was funny. And also, I talked about this on your show. Catholic school was it. If I could make the nuns laugh, they wouldn't hit me because I went to school when nuns would just beat the crap out of you.
Right.
You know,
I went to once a week I would get Catholic instruction, and there were the nuns with the full nun outfits. I went to a regular public school, and then once a week we all had to go and get this Catholic instruction up at the top of this tall hill. It was called the Cenacle, and all these nuns were there. But no nun ever hit me. I never got hit by a nun.
That's crazy. You were taught by them and they never touched you?
They never, no nun ever slapped me around.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I don't know if they were just—
Nuns would practice hitting on me. I mean, it was like, here's a ruler. Does that hurt? Okay, now let's try the yardstick. Does that hurt? Wait, let's get the broom. How about that? Does that hurt?
They were testing wood density on you.
Always doing that, yeah. So you're a very lucky person.
I was fortunate.
They were very much into corporal punishment.
Yeah,
I went to school.
And so you could use humor as a way to get out of trouble.
Always did, as much as I could.
Yeah.
Started in grade school, carried on into high school, into college, left college. And then when I went to San Francisco and they were doing this thing called Gay Open Mic Comedy Night, I thought that's interesting because I wanted to be a stand-up and I tried going to the comedy clubs, but I felt a lot of pushback in those days, because I looked—
What year is this?
Because basically I looked like a man. So right. I was getting a lot of pushback, like for wearing a tie, for example, like that. And this was the early 80s.
Early 80s.
'80s, like 1981, 82.
So it's not even in San Francisco, it's not progressive at that point?
Not at the comedy clubs. Absolutely not.
Wow. Okay.
So somebody started this gay comedy night and I thought, great. And I went and did it. And I love telling this because I told this to Rosie O'Donnell and she was like, no way. And I went, the first time I went out, I just killed.
Yeah.
I killed. I was supposed to do 10 minutes. I was on stage for like 20 minutes. And every time I tell that to a comic, they're like, you're fucking lying. I'm not. I killed.
But there's two ways that that happens. I have heard about comedians, and it's rare, who kill the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bomb the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth time.
Never bombed.
Wow.
Okay. It was just one of those things. And I think if I had bombed, I might have thought more, been more hesitant about leaving my day job as a construction worker and just going at it full time.
Right.
And I didn't. And that was it. So that was, believe it or not, April 20th. So 420, yeah. 1982 was when I walked out on stage as a stand-up comic for the first time.
And so you hit the ground running and you never looked back.
Never looked back. I haven't had a day job since.
Okay. I'm just going to point out that you're drinking more water than anyone I've talked to in a while. You keep pouring water and drinking more water and making a big show of it. I'm being polite saying it's water.
Okay.
Not a giant thing of gin.
It is. I can say that I am very thirsty, and I can say that I'm thirsty because I'm in this musical that makes me work really hard and I drink a lot of water.
You got to rehydrate for the vocalizations.
Somebody explain air conditioning to fucking Pasadena already. I mean, how hard? First of all, we're doing a musical at the Pasadena Playhouse. It's great fun. I hope you come see it, by the way.
Okay.
Head over heels. But, you know, it is in Pasadena. So let's say that the audience is, you know, Cocoon 3.
And Cocoon 3, meaning they found the magical egg that makes them young. They lost it. They found it again. They lost it again. And then they found it again.
It's kind of basically.
Yeah. So they're really old, but
they're
still
really old.
And that cocoon is running out of juice.
Yeah. So we got that going on for us. And then it's so hot in the theater. It's just incredibly hot. But I think they're figuring it out. They kind of figured it out. We opened on Sunday, and I think they figured out now that they need to turn the air conditioning on like basically yesterday to make sure that the theater is cool enough.
It's so funny because I swear this is true. I was talking to someone and I was doing a show somewhere at the Chicago Theater or something. And there was a technical guy there and he was talking about the temperature. And he said, yeah, well, once you get all the blood bags in here, the temperature will rise. And I said, what? What? And he went, you know, the audience. And I said, you refer to humans in the audience as blood bags?
So good.
And that's all it was to this guy was, oh, you get about 3,000 blood bags in here and the temperature will come up.
It's so funny.
And I'm like, those are human beings like you. And he's like, not me. They're blood bags.
Oh my God, it's hilarious.
I'm the air conditioning guy.
I told this story to Alaska 5,000 now. It used to be Thunderfuck, so I have no idea why Alaska's last name is no longer Thunderfuck. Maybe I'll ask her. But Alaska plays my queen and I play the king. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is one of my favorite quotes of all time, and it comes from Ethel Merman when she was in Gypsy. So we're talking in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. Ethel Merman called the house manager and it said, you better throw another log on that air conditioner or get yourself another girl singer. She had to be like 80 years old calling herself a girl singer. It makes me so happy.
I'm a girl singer, see?
See?
You better get another fire. One of those fire logs on there. Fast, see?
How did your Ethel Merman turn into Jimmy Cagney?
Trust me, all my impressions turn into either Jimmy Cagney or Jimmy Stewart really fast. They morph very quickly.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'll be doing Vladimir Putin and I'll be saying like, now you see here, see? We're going to get you, Biden, see? No one screws with Russia, see?
Oh my God. I like Edward G. Robertson. I generally go, you know, who's your messiah now?
At a certain point, when your impression just skews to that, no one cares. No one cares anymore. And I think I've talked about this before, but I love impressions that are completely out of time. No young person knows what you're talking about. But they laugh anyway because, you know, I'll be saying things like, yeah, now see here, you'll get yours, see? And they're just laughing. And they don't know what the hell it is.
Absolutely. I do this joke because what's great about this particular show is they let me just ad lib.
Right.
So did you ever see Spartacus?
Yes.
Okay, so you see, everybody's like, Spartacus, I'm in Spartacus. And then Tony Curtis is like, I'm a singer of songs. So he's just Tony Curtis. So
no attempt to get rid of his
Brooklyn at all.
Yes.
100% there. So King Basilius that I'm doing has a total New York accent. So he's like, everybody else is in like this, you know, thing. And King Basilius is like, you know, I'm trying to think of a line. I'm gonna bomb tonight. I've forgotten all my lines already.
This is a great sign. Yeah. You're drunk on water.
A horde of lusty bachelors paw the ground with great impatience, right? So.
Oh, you're really going to, it's going to take a lot of suspension of disbelief.
Oh, yeah. And I got the beard. And I got the
whole thing. What's the name of the show?
It's called Head Over Heels. It's
Head Over Heels.
It's a musical.
I'd want to come see it. Yeah.
Please come. It's a musical. It's based, it's all the music of the Go-Go's. So you'll know every song in it.
Right.
It's a jukebox musical.
So you've got so much going on right now. And I'm going to talk about this, but I first wanted to talk to you about your experience with, because this, everyone has a completely different experience. And when I talk to you, I think, well, you're probably someone who came out probably fairly young.
Or yeah.
Like, what would
for
be
for my
young,
generation.
For your generation, what would that be?
17.
So that's very young.
That's very young for my generation. Most people in my generation don't come out until their late 20s, early 30s. Right. You know what I mean? I'm 63. I'm much older than I look. So, yeah. And now with blue hair, I'm way older than I look.
No, you're much younger. Because it's really blue. It's the kind of blue that a 16-year-old has.
It's for the play.
I know.
It's for the play.
But I'm curious, you know, that takes – I don't know if that was just – I can't imagine that would be easy. I mean, we're talking about a completely different time. Is this late 70s, early 80s?
Yeah, this was late 70s.
Yeah, late
70s. It was illegal to be queer in every state of the union when I came out. That's how much we've done. So, and you know, in the course of my lifetime, it's a lot. We've changed things a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to make jokes about it. But still waiting for that, you know, 17-minute dance version of the Star Spangled Banner. It's part of the gay agenda. It's one thing on the gay agenda that nobody ever talks about, but we want that 17-minute dance version of the Star Spangled Banner.
How would that go?
Oh, say, can you? Something like that.
And hope breaks.
Yes,
hope breaks for dancing.
Then the flags start twirling.
You know, it's always good to have something still to aim for. You know, you don't want to be completely done. You know, you want that. You want that a little on the horizon.
You know, every time every time we get something, we need to add something to the list. I think that's a good idea. I like that. I always want to affect a trade. I think it'd be great. Like Roy Cohn was gay. Nobody wants him. Could we trade him for like Meryl Streep? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Would that be because we all want Meryl to be gay? She's not.
Right.
Meryl
right.
is the farthest thing from a lie, but we all want her. So right.
There are other people like that. I think. Well, J. Edgar Hoover. You know, we want to trade him too.
Definitely. Who do we get for Derek Jeter? Ooh, let's take Derek Jeter.
I love that you can just trade.
I know. Well, if they could they trade in like sports, wouldn't it be fun? We could just, these are our teams.
Yeah.
The queer team.
Yeah.
And the straight team.
We have that. Yeah. Okay. We have
I
this.
I wonder how far down you'd be on the list, Conan, for I people know. We want to trade.
I know. Let's not get it. Oh, now I'm getting sad all of a sudden.
Conan,
now I'm getting sad.
So sorry, Conan.
Because I know as a kid, I was always the last one picked for kickball. And I know it'd be another one like that where I'd be saying, no, I'm willing to go over to the queer team and just a bunch of people just saying, nah, we're good.
Now we're good. We're all set.
We're okay,
in fact,
Conan.
We're keeping Ray Cohn.
You're keeping Roy Cohn?
I'm keeping Roy Cohn.
I swear to God, I'll do a better job.
No, I don't know. All right, here's a dick. Let's see what you got.
Oh, well, okay. This is college all over again. All right.
Oh my God. That's it. I'm getting Katakai tattooed on my arm. That is my next step. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night because I got a phone call from some guy saying, out of the blue, I answered it because I was literally waiting for an Uber. So I get this phone call and I'm yelling at the Uber, basically. I'm already, before I even answer, hi, this is Leah. I'm like, yeah, I'm standing right here, blah, 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 you know, where are you? And then the guy goes, is this Leah Delaria? I was like, uh-oh, okay, yeah, this is Leah Delaria. Well, I regret to inform you that Janine Garofalo has COVID.
What?
And I'm not kidding. And that you're on a COVID list. And I went, Okay, first of all, I haven't seen Janine in probably 2 years.
This right? is, but this is long COVID.
Yeah.
This is, this is so, slow cook COVID.
The last time I was in a room with Janine Garofalo, there was no such fucking thing as COVID. So right. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here, right? So I don't know what's going on. And I'm questioning this guy again and again and again. But it's too late. He's called me on my phone. I've already said I'm me.
Who is this yeah. guy? That's
well,
the other question.
I don't know. But ever since I did, I've been getting all sorts of ads on my texting.
Oh, no.
So this guy... Whoever he fucking was.
What kind of scam is this?
I don't know what this scam is, but I'm not pleased about it. I've been getting all sorts of texts from Costco and from Home Depot and from all these places, none of which I trust, oh. all saying, you've got a gift certificate for whatever. It's like, who? Oh, I need no. everyone to know that somebody's going to call you, and if they drop Janine Garofalo's name, you're going to be in big fucking trouble.
So that's the scam. So if you get a call that says you've got COVID from Janine Garofalo, it means that basically it's just IKEA coming for you.
Basically, I've got, like, that's what I just, remember when I said
yeah.
I was just blocking.
What do you think that is? Now, Sona, you're yeah. savvy about these things. I am not.
Well,
I am
I
not.
Know.
But what do you think this is?
What, did you talk to Janine Garofalo? Does she actually have COVID?
I emailed Janine and got received nothing back.
Okay.
So
all right.
I don't know what the skinny is.
Is it possible that she is lending her name out and she's working for these companies?
Oh.
Is it possible that Janine is, because she has your number. How else are they going to get your number? I think Janine is making a lot of money, and I think certain celebrities,
this
is going to be the new cameo, is celebrities who have other celebrity contacts saying, call.
Can you imagine Janine Garofalo doing that, by the way? I'm just laughing at the whole idea.
Oh,
Janine
she's
going,
laughing all the
Costco?
Way to the bank.
Costco? I can get you Lena Larry's phone number.
I'm calling out Janine Garofalo right now. She is a genius scammer.
Gonna get sued. We're so gonna get sued.
They're gonna have to find us first.
But it was so. But that was part of it. Was like, of all the names, why are you dropping Janine's name? It's just so weird to me.
Yeah,
that is really strange. But I guess you got too comfortable. You were on the. That's a very vulnerable time when you're waiting for an Uber call. You're very vulnerable because if the phone rings, you're gonna pick it up.
I did, and immediately started yelling at my Uber driver, which wasn't on the other end of the phone.
Yeah. But you use your real name for Uber?
That's, I do.
See, that's your mistake.
That's my mistake.
Yeah.
What name do you, because I usually, when I go into a hotel and stuff, I register as Ava Braun.
Oh.
You think
oh
I'm
God.
Joking?
No, I don't think you're joking.
I
think you're
new.
Absolutely, because most people wouldn't get it. A lot of people wouldn't get it. And then the people that do get it would be horrified. But what are they going to do?
But also laugh.
Yeah.
And then when I come in at the LAX, there's a guy standing there with a sign that says Ava Braun.
Oh, my God.
That's fantastic. Well, now we know that. You've just revealed that. You're going to have to switch that name.
Oh, my God. I don't know. Who am I going to? Who was Mrs. Stalin?
Well, the first one killed herself.
Oh, there's that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that was actually the only one. He didn't remarry after that.
He didn't
that.
Remarry after she
Imagine
got
no one wanting to marry Stalin. Imagine him.
Imagine.
He's on a dating site. And they're like, what are your hobbies? I don't know, decimating 3 million of my own people.
Oh, shit.
Through various farm collectives. Oh, let's hook up for espresso.
You know what? That's an app waiting to happen. The despot
yes.
dating.
Yeah, Mao is on it.
And
Stalin's on it.
Somoza.
Yeah, they're all
Kim
on
Jong-un,
it.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
No. Putin.
Like, I don't know. They seem
the despot dating service.
Yeah. Saddam Hussein. Yeah. Sorry.
And you know who's going to be? You know who's going to be the face? Janine Garofalo.
Yeah,
she's
gonna, I know, Janine Garofalo is going to have all their numbers. I know, she's very cool, and I love Janine. She's a lovely person and very talented, but there was a phase there in the 80s, late 80s, when she was hanging out exclusively with dictators and despots. And they would all come see her do comedy.
It's, you know, I remember having a conversation with her once about something very much like that, where she was like saying, you know, a lot of people don't like him, but Somoza, he can really bake a cake. He's quite the cake baker.
She told me once, I remember we got in this conversation and she said, you know, you should give him Pol Pot. He's a good, he comes to a comedy show, he really gives it up. He's a generous laugher. You know how funny, I will say this.
Strikes me as odd about Pol Pot, though, I will say.
He that just
he
would let it go.
Comedy show, it's crazy.
You know, what's funny is that, it just reminds me of something. I am, like most of our breed, so needy for a laugh. If someone truly evil finds me amusing, it's hard for me not to like them.
Oh, no.
I will fight it, but you know what I mean? Do you know I ever have that where if someone's really cracking up at you and you know that, wow, I really don't like that person,
oh, yeah.
but man, I'm killing them right now. You start to go, you know.
I'll let
so
it
they,
go.
So they killed four people. It's an overcrowded planet.
Oh my God.
I can find reasons why.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, no. Some people would say that they really liked Orange, for example. And we would be like, we'd all be on set going, we don't want them to watch the show. We were not right. happy about various people that were saying they were
right,
fans.
Right.
You know, it's like, no, but I do have a soft spot in my heart for people who think I'm funny.
Yes. Well, you know, I know you've mentioned this before, but I love that there was not even a character for you when you auditioned for Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
You just made through like sheer force of your personality, right?
Yeah. Well, or Genji was smart enough to realize they needed a character like that.
Right.
And that should have been in the show in the first place, which is what I think happened. As she describes it, she says, when there wasn't a part for me in the show, that's literally what she said. Why isn't there a part for Lee in the show? There ought to be a part for Lee in the show.
Right. You should be there.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It reminded me that in the original Andy Griffith show, there was no – I'm really taking us back here, but there was no Barney, if you can believe that.
That's amazing.
There was no Don Knotts. There was no Barney Fife. And Don Knotts, I think, contacted – if I remember the story correctly, I think he contacted Andy Griffith and said – oh, you need me as your deputy. And can you imagine? That show doesn't exist without
Barney Fife.
And so I think it's the same thing where there's sometimes it just has to happen. When the right person comes along, everyone knows it immediately. Mm-hmm. Oh, Leah needs to be part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys all close still?
Oh, yeah. We're still friends.
Yeah.
We still see each other. We still text each other. We still, you know, talk and stuff. I was just actually texting with Prepon about 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
and just having a combo, you know, out of the blue.
She's one of those people who was coming on for that 70s show on my late night show in the 90s. And I feel like she was a kid.
Mm-hmm. She was a kid.
And so I have this place in my heart for these people that came on the show when they were, I don't know, 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And I feel like their uncle or something. You know, if I ran into her now, I would still feel like, well, how are you doing? You know, I'd probably give her an envelope with like $5, a Hallmark card and $5.
Crumpled.
Yeah.
Crumpled $5. Yeah,
exactly.
It has to be crumpled.
Are you doing your studies? Dude.
But yeah, so we keep in touch all the time. And a couple of people from the show and I are like, we're very tight. We hang out and do stuff together all the time. Vicky Tarver and Emily Tarver. That's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And Vicky Martinez. Because now I call them Lilith Fair because they're a dyke couple now. And they tour and they're funny and they play acoustic guitar and sing and stuff. So I just call them Lilith Fair. But I hang out with them all the time.
So you're in this great space now that, and I've mentioned this sometimes to people, I always envy people that get to a place where you can kind of do what you want. And you're in that place now where you can be in this show head over heels, but you're also in a film.
Couple films
at the same time.
Potato Dreams of America. This is a really interesting little independent film that I think people are going to fucking love. It's been getting great reviews and it's just a quirky, surreal, independent film about a kid and his mom who immigrate from Russia in the 90s mm-hmm. to Seattle
mm-hmm.
and the journey of that. And I play the kid's grandmother in Russia. And
so you need the accent.
I didn't. The way he did it, it's the story of the guy who was the kid.
Right.
And he's the director. So it's his story.
Right.
And he wrote it. He directed it, does the whole thing. Everybody and nobody in Russia has an accent. We all speak we're all Americans. We all speak like we speak.
And
then when they go to Seattle, they're the ones that have really thick accents, which makes them seem even more like a fish out of water.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Which is
that's
which
a is cool idea. That's a cool way to do it.
Yeah, I had a really cool experience with this. It played at the Provincetown Film Festival, and John Waters lives in Provincetown. He has two homes, one in Baltimore and one in Provincetown. He probably has a million homes, but those are the two places that he lives. And John and I have become friends over the course of time. So it was being shown at the film festival. I came in. John comes in. We went down. We hadn't seen each other since COVID. So we were just talking about our experience, COVID, blah, 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 blah. And then I sat down behind John, two rows behind him after talking to him for 15 minutes. The movie starts. We watch John stays for the whole movie, which is good. I'm like watching him more than I'm watching the movie because I want to see what he thinks about the movie. And so he's staying. And I've seen him. He gets up. He goes.
If he's not,
he doesn't like it.
If it's not digging it, he just goes.
He goes. So he stays for the whole movie. He stays for the credits, which is, again, unusual. He's staying for the Q&A, which is what's happening. So I'm up there for the Q&A, and he's the first one to raise his hand. And he goes, I have to tell you, Leah, I spent the entire movie going, who is that actress, the one playing me, the Russian grandma. It wasn't until the credit rolls that I found out it was you. And so that was like, yes!
That's fantastic.
Nobody's ever said anything like that to me about my acting before. I was really excited.
And he was talking to you beforehand.
I know, it's insane. So and that's what the reviews are basically saying, that you don't even realize it's her. Because she just disappears into the character.
Congratulations.
Which is kind of nice.
That's so cool.
So, but it's very funny. She's very funny, this character. She just, she's just the voice of pessimism in every situation. So she's very funny, very dry. And a lot of this movie is really, really funny. So, and it's been picked up for theatrical release. I believe it comes out in February.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Is it going to be in theaters?
Theaters.
Okay. I hope theaters come back. I really do.
Me too. Want them
back.
Me too. I want to go see Dune in a theater. I don't want to even waste my time.
Well, there's a couple things like that. I haven't had time yet to go see James Bond, and I don't want to see James Bond on a television set.
Who wants to watch James Bond on a television set? No, I got to see. Yeah, again, I got to see Dune. I was okay with Halloween, though. With watching that on television rather than in a movie theater was fine with me.
Yeah. There are some ones, and maybe I don't know if it's an insult or not, but there are some films where, yes, I'm definitely like, I'll check it out on TV. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Yeah.
And then there are movies where I just refuse.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have – I need that experience.
Some things, yeah. Like I can't see any space-related anything on a TV. I want to see anything where they're in space, outer space. I want to see that in a big movie theater.
You want to be there. You want to be taken into
Westerns.
That experience.
Westerns, same thing. I want to be in the bigness of a Western.
Were you surprised or – you know, because it's – I think it's often an assumption that – someone like you can sing and then you do stand-up and you're a stand-up comedian, there's an assumption that all stand-ups, they can transition into acting, and it's really not true.
No, not true at all.
It's not true at all. I mean, and in fact, I could name names, but I've had many friends who over the years are terrific stand-ups and they go into acting, and I can see them, they're checked out. They're not present on the screen as the character.
Yeah.
And it bothers me because I think there's kind of a misconception that that's what happens. You're a stand-up and then you become an actor and that's just what you do. And so many of them, almost what makes them a great stand-up is they are 100% them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They can't sublimate who they are to a character. They can't subsume themselves or dissolve into something else.
How many stand-ups do you know listen? Let's just start there. And the most important thing in acting is listening. So
I didn't get any of that, by the way. Totally blanked.
I wasn't listening. What was that? Huh? So yeah, that would be the biggest obstacle, I think.
Yeah.
When it comes to that. But, but then again, when I do stand up, I'm a very environmental stand up. I'm clocking the audience. I am listening. I am hearing what they're saying and what they're doing. And I incorporate them so much into the stand up itself.
Right.
And, so I'm like, I'm less of a material writer and more of a just kind of being funny while I'm standing on stage.
Yeah. And you probably love doing crowd work.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's what I do at universities.
Yeah.
I talk for about 20 minutes. And then I take questions. And it's like, but that's an that
and then
takes
you're off
an
to,
hour.
Then you're off to the races.
Yeah. And that's it. They just came, they stand up, they ask me any question they want because I'm very knowledgeable.
Which is what very knowledgeable people say.
Well, I receive a lot of, basically I have a tiny crystal that's been embedded in my uterus and it allows me to get all sorts of, you know, information from the cosmos. Mm-hmm. I call it my beaver receiver.
Are these available at Goop? I think you can get these at Goop.
Beaver receiver.
It's $169.
Yeah. And you know whose face is on the package? Janine Garofalo.
God, she's good. Janine, if you're out there, you're just a genius. And tell me about, you did this documentary, The Lesbian Bar Project.
Yes, that's
And why was I not allowed to participate?
You're so far down on the trading list. I mean,
God damn
it's
it.
Just, you know.
It's not fair.
I'm serious. We took Ann Coulter instead.
Oh, no.
This is devastating for me.
Like
I'm standing there
happen.
Like, does someone want me?
Oh my God.
Take Ann Coulter. Come on.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? They think she's sexy.
Did you see her depiction? Did you watch Impeachment?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Impeachment's really good.
I can't wait.
It's really, really good. I think it's beautifully cast. I think it's very – I mean, I wasn't even – I thought, well, I know the whole Lewinsky scandal. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see that. I started watching it, my wife and I, and we were glued to it. But so she's played by Colby Smulders.
Oh.
And she's great. And she is sexy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know. Whereas, none of those GOP people, they all think they're so hot. And it's like, ugh, dried up old Republican cooch. Be like going down in a Triscuit. Screw it. Oh, my God. Which gives a whole new meaning to cheese and crackers.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Can't stand them.
And I like Triscuits.
You
just ruined Triscuits for me.
You'll never eat another one.
Yes, I will.
Yes, I will.
My God, that image is going to go through my head.
Just, oh, my God.
Oh, man, I can't wait to get down there and what the hell?
Crunch. Crunch. Crunch.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
People are going to be pulling over. Anyone listening in their car right now has just crashed. We've created so many accidents right now.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. The Lesbian Bar Project.
Yes.
Tell us about this documentary.
So in my youth, dyke bars were everything. It's where you went. It's where you met community. It's where you met,
right.
You know, it's where you went to dance. It's where you met people. It was a safe space. It was, of course, where I found pussy always. So they were prevalent. So as the world has changed, as we've become, as a people, more accepted, we don't really need those kinds of safe spaces in the way that we used to. We mm-hmm. still need them. Don't get me wrong. But instead of having to go to a dyke bar, I can go to any bar.
Sure.
And nobody gives me shit.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Of course, that's not true 100%. We know that. But it's one of the reasons why they are waning. Lesbian bars are waning left and right. The other reason
numbers?
Is...
Do you have numbers?
Yeah, I sure
this?
Do. In the 1980s, there was close to 300 lesbian bars in the United States. There's now 20... It was 21. We just lost one.
Wow.
So there's now 20 in all of the U.S. So the Lesbian Bar Project was something I started with a couple of friends, and which is sponsored by Jägermeister, where we basically tried to raise funds to keep the remaining dyke bars in America open.
Mm-hmm.
And we raised $250,000. We made $250,000.
Good for you.
During the pandemic, which I think was really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From lesbians. I'm said that as dry as I could because not because we're notoriously cheap or anything, but because we are fucking cheap as fuck. And so the fact that we were able
is that real? I didn't realize that was so real.
But, you know, there are reasons for that. First of all, we are women. Mm-hmm. So we do make less money than men. And
right.
It's two women making less money together. You can almost make one man there with your salary. You know what I mean? So it's you know, so the money can be, the money is a tight issue.
Right,
and, you know, especially if you're like really ardent dykes. And sometimes people don't want to hire you. There's this thing called discrimination. You might have heard of it. So
doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah. So yeah, wouldn't.
So like, therefore, it doesn't
exist. It wouldn't for you, straight white guy, would it? But so yeah. So all that happens. All that comes together, and that's another reason why dyke bars are having a hard time being open, because the women don't have the money, and they don't have the money to go to the bar and keep it open the way we used to, because it was the only place to spend our money. We would go there. Now we can spend our money anywhere. So it's just there's all sorts of reasons why this is happening.
Well, it's interesting because you're saying in the one hand, you're saying that they've waned because there isn't the same need for them. But at the same time, it sounds like there kind of is a need.
There is a need. And that's what I think. I think we fooled ourselves in thinking that there isn't a need for that. And I think that my younger generation, especially the younger generation, the younger queer generation, they don't even want to be called lesbians. They want to be called queer. They're gender queer, or whatever the fuck that means. And they just want to say, well, we don't want to just party with lesbians. We want to party with everyone. And I'm here to tell you that every now and then you just want to be with your own.
Yeah.
And I think everybody can relate to that. I don't think there's a person on the planet that doesn't understand that.
Right.
And when you go into that bar, like Cubbyhole is my home. That's the bar that I go to the most. And it's in New York City. Mm-hmm. It's in the West Village. It is the best. It's the greatest dyke bar in the world, I think. But I know that when I walk in there, my shoulders just relax. The weight of the world comes off me. I'm going to be there with my family and friends, and we're going to have a good time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think the younger generation needs to clue into that, to find that space that this is, look, this is where you can just be you and be with your own. And who doesn't want that?
I think I see this with, you know, I have teenage kids, and I see that, and I hear through them that, and I think you'd also have to just be completely blind and deaf not to know that it's in the culture, but there are so many categories now that you'd think it could be overwhelming for some young people.
Oh, you're talking about the alphabet?
Yeah, exactly. and sometimes I think
the alphabet is, soup.
Yeah. Well, for the only thing the only thing for me is I have whatever someone decides or realizes they are, I want them to realize that and be happy. But when people are very young, I remembered, it's just so confusing. Sexuality is so confusing when you're 12, 13, 14. And sometimes there's pressure with this almost cosmos of choices.
It's insane.
And sometimes you feel like it's hard enough to navigate at a time when there was, I'm straight or I'm not straight. You know, now there's so much that I think it
gay,
it can feel
lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, LGBTQ. That one's a good one. AI allies, intersectional. By the time you're done saying it, the fucking parade's over. Okay. And if we could just. Oh my God.
Where'd my parade go?
I know, right? And I've always been queer. I'm one of those people. Queer is queer. I think queer handles everything. I say queer. I don't, you know what the Q in that stands for? The LGBTQ, it stands for questioning. Why do I have to include them if even they don't know what the fuck they are? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it just gets ridiculous here. Can we just call ourselves? Also, by doing what you're saying, what they think is inclusioning, it to me points out our differences rather than our shared oppression.
Yeah.
And I think that's the shared oppression is what makes us a community. So I get it. I understand what they're trying to do. I just think they're going about it a little ham-handedly. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with queer.
Right.
But, you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, I'm a dyke. I'm not a lesbian. And the difference is about $500,000.
Well, so in this
that was a class joke. I
know.
Made a class joke.
The so in the lesbian bar project, this is the story of how these bars used to exist. There used to be more of them, and kind of
basically
how you're trying to bring it back.
How we're bringing them back, and how we're trying to keep them up. And we've actually, I'm not sure how much of this I can discuss, but this is going. There will be a series that is going to be made from this,
right?
And it will be me going to every lesbian bar left in America.
Oh wow!
And you know, talking with the patrons. patrons there and so on and so forth. I think that's the most I can say. Yeah, I can't say where, when, or any of that at the moment.
Can we announce that I'm going with you?
Yeah. Oh. Oh my God, that would be so funny. I can't stop.
Most people think I'm Jane Lynch anyway, so why don't Hey, everybody, I'm here to help out. I've got big ideas for this dyke bar.
But that would be already that.
Trust me, I understand your struggle better than anybody. Wait. And I'm here to roll up my sleeves and get to work.
But wouldn't that be funny?
Be funny.
So I brought Jane Lynch, and it's just Conan. And Conan just walks in to like...
Not even wearing a Jane Lynch wig.
I know. There's this one called Hers in Mobile, Alabama. That's... Well, let's do that there. I brought Jane Lynch, and it'll be fucking Conan.
I'll be there.
Funny.
And I'll just commit to it. Yeah, I improvise my part in 40-Year-Old Virgin. It's really good to be here. And my apologies to Jane Lynch, who I know well and who is...
she's great.
She's great and also so much better looking than me. That is not a put down to Jane Lynch. She's gorgeous. You know what? This is a joy. This was really fun. I always have a blast with you. I really do.
Back at you. I'm always excited when I know you're going to be around, my friend.
And I'm very happy for you because you have figured it out. You have the world by the ass. I mean, it's just really nice. You can do whatever you want. And you're just...
Including Felch. I know. I've got the world by the ass.
I don't know.
And now I'm going to suck on its anus. Oh, my God. I almost spit out my water.
Is it Triscuit?
Is it Triscuit involved in this move? Or is it... We have to go with a different cookie, I suppose. We'll figure it out. I got to go call my mom and say, skip this one. Like my mom's listening to a podcast.
All right. Your podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that your mom, Katakai?
Katakai! As God made her! Leah Delaria, you are an absolute joy. And please take over the world and run it. That would be a happy place.
Oh.
Seriously.
Yes. That means more people can get me things.
And please choose me. Pick me. I swear I could help. Help your team. I really could. Aww. I just want to be chosen.
I know. All right. This is to all the dykes that are listening to this. Do we want Conan? You can DM me.
Okay, please. And then you have to let us know what the response was.
I'm so going to let you know.
I know. And you know what?
If one lesbian DMs me and goes, we want Conan, I'm so letting
Great.
You know.
Great. Good. I'm totally on board. And I've got my bags packed and I'm ready to go. Leah, God bless. Be well. And please come back. This was so much.
Time.
You're one of these people that needs to come back
because
we didn't scratch the surface.
I'm in.
This could have gone on for way longer.
Let's do it.
All right.
Okay. But that did scratch my back.
Nobody
knew that, but Conan was scratching my back.
It's a thing.
During the whole show.
It's called the Conan. It's a move. And man, is it creepy. No one on any side of the spectrum wants it.
Look, I snorted. Conan made me snort. He totally made me snort, y'all.
I'd like to bring up some exciting news.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
You just took the word that I used and repeated it. This is a big deal in my career anyway, which is for the first time in a long, long time, maybe well over a decade, maybe 15 years, I have a new headshot.
Oh.
You know, performers are supposed to have a headshot.
Yeah.
And they've kind of gone out of vogue because it used to be you had to have a headshot. So when I had the late night show, I had, headshots. And then all throughout the different incarnations of my shows over the years, over the almost 30 years, I've had headshots. And then I realized lately that, I haven't had a new one in a long time. And the one that occasionally someone will ask for one.
Yeah.
You go to a dentist and the dentist will say, hey, could you send me a headshot? Or you'll drop something off at the dry cleaner and they'll say, oh, is it okay, Mr. O'Brien, if we have a headshot?
Yeah. And you go, hey, do you want a headshot? You do that a lot when you go out.
Mostly I'm not asked. I do say, would you like a headshot?
Yeah.
And they say, why? And I say, please. Would you please put a headshot up of me?
He does that to us every time we come in.
Yeah, I'm constantly begging people to put up a headshot of me. Places where they really shouldn't go, like funeral homes and stuff.
Oh, no.
But anyway, the one that I've had is, I swear to God, I think it's from when I first went to Turner, which is like 12 years ago.
It was old.
And I think it hurts. I'm holding a newspaper, I think.
that says Obama wins historic first run for presidency.
We did.
Yeah. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was holding that paper, but it dated it very quickly.
But there was one where you had a beard.
Yeah, this one where I had a beard months. From like the transition to Tonight Show to Turner and the tour. So some of them were very aggressively dated, you know, and I was leaning against, I remember at a 2009 Toyota Corolla.
It's weird that this one just has the newspaper where it says QAnon shaman gets 41 months in prison.
I like a specific reference in my headshots. No, this one just came out because someone asked me for a headshot recently. And like I say, it's kind of gone out of style. Most people, I want to say it's older people that want a headshot. No young person wants a headshot. It's usually an older person that's like, could I have a photograph of you?
Yeah, I guess. That makes sense.
So, because everyone else just takes a selfie.
Yeah.
And then they, young people want a selfie. But someone thought, well, we should get new headshots. This just came in. I'm a handsome looking fella.
Let's see these.
Look at that.
Well, I'll hold it up. Guy. But I am.
Look at that.
I'm holding my chin in a way that I never have in real life.
Yeah.
I'm doing that. I'm thinking about something. Clearly, the photographer said you need to use your hand and put it on your chin. But I actually don't think that's my hand. I think that's the prosthetic dummy hand.
It does look like a daintier hand than yours.
Yeah. But I like that I'm wearing a jean jacket. I'm wearing my cool biology teacher outfit.
Yeah.
The hair is nice and up. And I look like a happy chappy.
You're like, hey, guys, look at me. I'm a nice guy.
This is a solid headshot if you want to go audition for some commercials. Like, you'll get some bookings.
Yeah. I think I would get bookings with this. You're probably joking or doing one of your cruel jibes, Matt, but I do think this would get me some
I think so.
Bookings. I look a little devilish, too, in this headshot.
Do you think you look devilish?
Well, I sort of look like I just thought of something pretty kinky. I've got some ideas in my head that may not be PC.
Imagine if you put that behind a window and you're looking outside from inside, like that person's looking in at your room. Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
This person's peeking. Let me see if I can do a peeking here. This is the window right here. Mm-hmm. And then this guy just comes up and he's like...
Oh, no.
Look at that creep peeking.
Shark
That's
fin.
A creep. Yeah, and then look at this right here. You're in the water. You're having a good time. Suddenly the whistle blows. Everyone comes running out, and this red fin goes by. Everyone screams, runs out of the water, and then slowly I emerge. I've noticed there are some performers that keep a headshot going for like 35 years.
Yeah.
And so they'll be in their 80s, and their headshot is clearly from when they were like 40.
We should do that with you. That's a nice one.
Yeah, I'm just going to hang on to this. And as my head rots, which it will.
Yeah, it will.
The Irish do not age well. Oh. As my head rots like a pumpkin in the sun 4 months after Halloween in the deep south, I rots and festers. I will keep putting this out there. And the disparity between my real face and this youthful face will become more and more shocking and apparent.
Yeah, it's a great photo, though. That's a good choice.
I like it. I really do. I'm happy that there's a new headshot. And I just want to say to all of our listeners, you've really got to check out the new headshot.
How will they check it out?
Matt, how will the listeners check out the headshot? Is there any way? Because this is too good a headshot for me to keep to myself.
I've
got to get the word out. Do I put this in a cylinder and we mail them out individually across the nation?
We used to have to do that.
Or is there something that uses technology?
If they just go to Team Coco Podcasts on Instagram, it'll be there. At some point. Now, I just want to say that I'm not responsible for posting those things because usually when these episodes come out, I get a lot of people going, hey, Gorley, where's the thing you promised?
Hey, well, whose job is it?
I don't know.
You have a whole team.
Well, I know I have a whole team, but I think Adam's here and he's supposed to be the grand poobah in charge of everything. Adam Sachs, are you here?
I'm here. I'm always here.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So you just heard of a major malfunction and did nothing.
Hey, wait to be called on.
You are the captain of the Titanic. You just heard that we hit an iceberg and you decided then you'd go and make yourself some creme brulee. if we mention something, whose job is it to make sure that it goes on the Team Coco website?
It's on Instagram and it's the marketing team. But it's our job. It's the podcast, people who work for the podcast team to make sure that the marketing team is aware that it's coming and that they have the right assets and that they know the timeline. And so,
did you say assets? You just said my headshot was an asset.
It is an asset.
Have you seen the headshot? Do you really think this is an asset?
They're trading that on the New York Stock Exchange.
This is the new Bitcoin. This is the new Doja coin.
NFT.
I just bought a luxury yacht for 900 Conan headshots. Let's get on it.
Please take that scene in Die Hard where they open the safe and pull out those bearer bonds, but it's a stack of Conan headshots.
Yes. Do that. Or, when they open the briefcase in Pulp Fiction and light comes out, you come around and it's this headshot. I mean, you can have fun. I'm giving you ideas for ways that you can pass the time at home at your own expense, placing my new headshot into awkward positions in great iconic moments. But I'm proud of it. I'm really happy. And I think this is my last headshot. I don't think I'm ever getting another one. Wow. Why would I get one when I really look hideous and terrible? I wouldn't.
Well, so you're okay with being like 80 and then somebody says, can I have a headshot? And you're fine with giving that one?
You bet.
All right.
Yeah. What do I care? If anyone still remembers me at that point, I'll just be delighted. It's true. Check it out. Go to the Team Coco website, and
you go to the Team Coco Podcast's Instagram.
Oh, sorry. Account. Go to Team Coco Podcast Instagram account, and there's an 8% chance that my headshot will be there.
Fingers crossed.
Because that's about as good. That's optimistic.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.